You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, Moody's, I don't know if it's sort of saying, well, this is what you're going to get on March the 27th, but it's just downgraded South Africa's GDP forecast from a fairly anemic 1% to a pretty pathetic 0.7%, and that's probably quite generous, I would have thought.
Well, it's in line with everybody else, you know, that growth is going to be point below 1%. You have to look at this against where we were perhaps at the similar period last year, where everybody thought it would be 1.5 to 2%. So it's half of what we originally thought it would be. And that's the trend. You know, every year we keep downgrading. The worry is that what's the potential for the economy for the next 2 to 3 years or even beyond? And Lindsay, it's no greater than 1%. So I think we're going to live with this. I don't understand economics. When I say I don't understand,
of course you do.
But economists are able to work out what the potential is. In other words, let's say, what are the factors of production? What are the skills? What is the capacity? I don't know how they get to this number. But they're able to kind of forecast, well, it can't grow beyond this. And I suppose electricity and power has a lot to do with it. So the outlook for the next few years is going to remain against these kind of levels. So, you know, with Moody's, I don't know when their announcements are going to come out.
March the 27th.
Anybody looking at that, yeah, so someone's got to be able to say against this, well, you know, what the chances of paying debt down, which is increasing over the next few years. You know, no wonder the other rating agencies are fairly negative, because it's going to put a strain on everybody here, certainly on the fiscus, to pay down debt. So yeah, it's a reality which we have to face.
I think
that's why the rand's perhaps, the dollar's been quite strong today. And the rand's now at 40.98, so we've given up whatever gains we had last year and heading, you know, once again to that 15 level and almost 19.5 against the pound. Now, that might be because of Moody's is coming out with that view, or alternatively, it's just a factor of the market today.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons that was mooted for the rand going close to 15 again and changing its big figure from 14 is because of the Moody's announcement. But I say to myself, you know, it's just an excuse. As you quite rightly said, they're just going in line with everybody else.
They are. I don't know how they work it all out, you know, how everybody, but I'm sure that they take guidance from the other organizations. IMF have come and downgraded us to, I think, 0.8 or thereabouts. It might even be lower than that. And you know something, Lindsay, if you look at the results coming through, every day now we're starting to get results which are pointing towards more and more stress in this economy.
Yes.
It's not only, yes, these are multinational companies with elements of South African trading in, but it's just ongoing now that it's the pressure is starting to build up on corporate numbers and not looking good.
No, and on that note, actually, one of the first ones that came out this morning, which is in line with what you've just said, is the Bid Corporation Limited. Bid Corp came out with a trading statement. Yeah. The share price on my screen is down 3% at the moment, about 45 minutes before the close. But you know the whole Bid Group quite well. What do you make of Bid Corp? Do you like it?
Well,
or, again, is it just one of those ones that you just can't touch simply because of what you've alluded to in the last 6 minutes?
Well, this is better than – this is offshore. Okay, so they have limited South African exposure, but it does show a slowdown in food services. That's what they do. They have exposure in Australia. I don't know whether that's been hit by the fires, you know, because it's more hospitality. That's what food services are. Hong Kong has been a bit of an issue for them. I don't know what growth is like in Europe, but overall, they've impressed us on the upside. And I think why the market has come down is that I think the market was positioning itself for a slightly better result. I think I haven't got the numbers in front of me, 3 to 5%, whatever it is. I think the market was looking for a lot more than that, maybe in the region of 7, 8 or 9%.
I do see their trucks whizzing around the Netherlands almost every day. If I go out, I see Bid Services, Bid Food, whatever it is, and they're delivering food. So they're doing well in certain countries, and then Netherlands is one country that's doing better even than Germany, France, Italy. But obviously they're feeling the strain as well. David, the big standout set of results today was Anglo American Platinum Limited, because their share price up around 4.5% as we speak. These numbers are staggeringly good.
They are. They're exceptionally good, and the market is pricing in the good performance. There's just one factor about this.
Yes.
Production flat. So this is a, you know, production is pretty, if you look at it, they didn't increase production a lot. What did increase was the basket, the PGM basket. So in dollar terms, it was up 27%. In rand terms, about 38%. And that gave the big move. And, of course, they generate a huge amount of cash. And the problem is you're saying, well, okay, what's the outlook? You know, how does the outlook? Are they going to increase production, or are we going to rely on a weakening rand and increasing prices again? So I think that's the only caveat. And probably they look a little overpriced, maybe relative to Impala and Sibanye, who've got some upside in that on that side of it, you know, can increase production and that. So I've still got to go through the results in much greater detail. But I think the one thing that struck me was that. But that's not holding the price back, you know, because it's still the platinum producers, you know, that are running hard. Lindsay, we're not going to stop them. No. You know what I mean?
It's it's a fantasy. It's a fairy tale story. And South Africans, when you see precious metals running, especially now these days, the platinum group metals, because we dominate 75% of world production, then a South African investor, a punter, is going to say, I've got to be part of this. There's two questions I ask you now. Number one, do you think they're holding back production because this is what South Africa should have been doing for many, many years? In other words, saying, well, we hold all the cards here, so we're going to restrict how much there is, so our prices go up, and you can pay up or get new technology and find some other metals that might fill your catalytic converters or whatever else they're used for. That's the first thing. And secondly, is it a sign that Chris Griffiths is unlike a prize fighting boxer, a heavyweight champion who carries on and on? He's just saying, right, this is the top. I'm getting out of here. So 2 points
that's very interesting, because that's the first that I thought, you know, look, he's had a very strong track record. He was at Kumba. He left Kumba in very good shape. And in fact, we were a bit disappointed when he left Kumba to join Anglo Platts about 5 or 6 years ago. I'm not sure how many years he's been there.
More than that.
But he's done an incredible, he's done a very, very good job at Anglo Platts. And, you know, if you look back and look at Anglo Platts when he took over and where it is today, he's got rid of a whole lot of other, you know, areas which were unproductive. He's got or unprofitable. He's sold off a lot of mines, and they're in a far better shape, you know, when he retires now than they were when he took over. What the outlook is, you need a bigger brain than me, someone who understands mining, to try and forecast whether they will increase production or not. It's not always easy. Mining's not easy, but I would have thought that, you know, in a year like this, they would have production would have been better. But let me not. I don't want to stick my neck out, not being that knowledgeable on how mines operate and what held them back. But it is something that's just struck us. You know, it certainly struck me.
Yes, another one that struck me today was the voluntary trading statement for the 6 months ended the 31st of December from Discovery. I'm looking at it now, and it says here. Now, you just say you hadn't read the results, or rather the trading update, which you have done, of course. Over the 6 months ended 31st of December, all of Discovery's established and emerging businesses, with the exception of Vitality Life, produced robust operating results. And so it goes on, and then it lists it. It says, indicative increase or decrease in normalized profit from key operations, Discovery Health, plus 8%. Discovery Life, up 25%. Discovery Invest, 7%. Insurer, up 21%. And so it goes on and on and on. And yet the share price getting walloped.
Well, because the bottom line, which comes down further, you know, further down the statement, is that headline earnings are going to be down between 8 and 13%. Now, that's a big. So when we read what's happening at the top, these are all the divisions are making good sales or their profits are up, obviously below the line, below all of this, things are happening there which are very, very costly. We don't know what the real cost of Vitality Life means. You know, they were down 145%. This is a hedge that's gone wrong. We're going to have to find the detail out lower. But what does come through is that that there are things happening below the line which we can't quite get a grip on.
Are they once-off, though? You see, this is what people will say. This is a knee-jerk reaction, surely, because...
No, it's not.
Okay.
Because this is ongoing. This is ongoing. You know, this is what they call increase in spend on new initiatives. You know, that's up 81%. So it means they're plowing more and more money into these new initiatives. But what's happening is we're not seeing the gains from these new initiatives. You know, in other words, let me put this in another way. With all those numbers that you're seeing, you're hoping to see something come through to the bottom line. And it's not. When your profits are down 13%, you're saying, hold on, so when are these new initiatives going to kick in a positive way? So it's a rather, you know, it's a bit disturbing, or let's put it this way, we don't quite grasp what's happening. You know, we it's hard to reconcile exactly as you've said with the bottom line. But the market's saying, hold on a sec, this is not what we wanted from a company that used to produce plus 20% profits every year, you know, year after year after year, which hasn't done so for the last couple of years.
Well, of course, this is the old skyscraper head office syndrome, you know, when someone starts to say to themselves, well, you know, we're doing so well, we're going to build a Google or Apple style head office in Sandton, and up it goes. And then the share price ever since then, actually, probably coincidental, hasn't done so well. And I don't know, maybe it could be a once off.
I think the health and life and invest and all those companies that rely on South Africa, even though they've got what Adrian describes as robust results, I think they're slowing down. I think the bottom line there is slowing down, and it has to. It has to. And you know, we started off this conversation by saying that Moody's have downgraded growth here to 0.7%. How can you grow a financial services business or an insurance business in an environment where you got growth of that rate, you know, 0.7%? You can't. You know, it's impossible year after year. And I think this is starting to hurt, you know. And so while they might be up 25%, we don't know the composition of that number. You know, remember, Life had a pretty bad year last year. So this could be recovering from you know, from problems they had there. So probably the 7% and 8% are more in line with what's happening. But that's not good enough.
I'd like to see a pie chart of their earnings. I mean, a very simplistic one. If you could just describe to somebody where they derive their income from, you'd say, well, South Africa is 52%, the UK is 22%, etc. I'd like to know, because the UK is, I don't care what anyone says, it's going to be under pressure and is under pressure at the moment. Yeah. I mean, it's getting whacked. Insurance companies are getting whacked because of storms. The beleaguered high street is crumbling before our very eyes. Brexit is still an uncertainty. And the European Union has said, yeah, we're going to be at each other's throats until December, which is when the trade deal has to be ratified. I just wonder, and then you've got Ping An, and I don't suppose that insurance business in China is being too badly affected. In fact, it might actually be boosted by the coronavirus. But there seems to be something in the future that doesn't quite sit well with the prospects for Discovery.
That's the problem, because the health, life, invest, and insurance is very small, but the three first health, life, and invest, that makes up the bulk of the profits. In fact, if you look at health, life, invest, and I think about the UK number, the UK business, up to the last set of results, and you know, you asked me the question, that made 112% of the profits. The rest took away 12%. Okay, so I'm trying to put it in very simple form. So health, life, and invest and UK give 112%. The rest took away 12. So it means that it's pretty much the kind of picture you need health, life, and invest to keep providing the profits to, you know, to finance the other. Now, we need that minus 12 to match the 100 that the other three are giving. And that's taking too much time. Sorry, I don't want to get complicated, but what I'm trying to say is that the investment that they're making, you know, this all this money they're plowing into the bank, into Vitality, to all these other businesses, has got to start kicking in sooner or later. Because that top end, you know, those three mature businesses are not generating what they used to. And that's that to me kind of sums it in a very simple way that, you know, this is these are my worries that the other businesses in which they've invested so much money are not kicking in fast enough or big enough to compensate the slowdown that we're seeing in the other businesses.
Let's go overseas now if we can, because I sent out a tweet last night when I was watching Michael Bloomberg or coverage of Michael Bloomberg. He's now spent $400 million in his feud with Donald Trump, and it was quite interesting. He was interviewed by somebody. The interviewer said some clever statement like, I don't know, now you're going head to head with another billionaire for the presidency. And he said, who's the other billionaire? Because obviously implying that Mr. Trump is not a billionaire. But this guy's got $60 billion. He's paid $400 billion in advertising spend. And he's really having a go. And if you got $60 billion, you'd spend $1 billion, wouldn't you? Just to rival one of the most hated characters in your circle of friends. I would certainly do it.
Well, that's his whole purpose. He watched as this market unfolded, you know, the Democratic primaries unfolded, and he said there's nobody there to stand up against Trump. He didn't want to go into it, but he said, hold on a second, there's no one there that's going to be able to stand up Trump. And I think that his dislike for Trump, which has come through in interviews, just believing he's not the right man, and someone needs to stand up. And I'm trying to remember what he said, but highly critical of what Trump stands for. And that's the only reason he decided, okay, well, let me give it a go. As you mentioned, he's got a lot of money, significantly more than Trump has. He's not going to outside people to finance his campaign. He's doing it all himself.
Yeah.
And that gives him a lot more pressure. And I think he's beginning to worry some of the other incumbents, the Bernie Sanderses, certainly Biden. You know, and I think he'll come through. We're gonna see next week at what they call Super Tuesday, where a lot of primaries from various states take place, and you'll see where he is. It could lead to a number of people dropping out. He's the only one who's got any chance of standing up to Trump.
Well, he certainly
others are not going to make it.
Talking about standing up to Trump, I mean, Mr. Trump isn't 6'3". We know that he wears lifts and heels. I mean, it's very well documented. It's very well documented. But maybe he's 6 foot or 5'11" or something. Trump keeps on going on about Michael Bloomberg being 5'4". He always calls
little
people
Mikey. Little Michael.
Mikey, yeah, mini Mike. Mini Mike. He calls him, which is very funny. But he's actually 5'7". Which isn't tall. I don't know how tall you are, David.
It's me.
No, is it 5'7"? Mini. What can I call you? A diminutive David.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but you see, but it's a fascinating personal battle they've got going there. And I have to say that Michael Bloomberg looks a little bit more composed at the moment than Donald Trump. What else have you been seeing, David?
Bloomberg can get at him.
Yeah.
Bloomberg's a sharp man.
He really is.
I've listened to a number of interviews where he's spoken with Lloyd Blankfein. You know, he's a Bloomberg channel, and he's been, you know, he was the mayor of New York, and he did a lot of good work for New York while he was the mayor. And so he's no monkey. You know, he's not new to the political scene. He might not be used to electioneering to Kansas or Tennessee or those states, but he certainly hold up again in California and Chicago and places like that.
Yeah, I think so. Have you ever been to the new Bloomberg building in the City of London? I mean, it's been up for two and a half.
Oh, not London. Sorry. I've only been to the New York one.
It's really, really beautiful.
Across the road from Bloomingdale's,
It's just
it's a staggering building. I'm talking about New York.
Yes.
It and It is an incredible building. And not only that, when you come in there, they make you feel welcome. There's coffee, there's biscuits, there's, you have no idea what it's like. And I went to their studios, I went to their radio, the radio place, and they have a full kitchen because people stay late, and especially in a city like New York. I was incredibly impressed. Funny enough, I saw Michael Bloomberg walking around.
Yes.
And he there's no fancy office the size of Empire State, you know, or of a rugby field. That he's a very humble man from that point of view. I think works in an open office as he did when he was mayor. So, and, you know, he's walking around chatting to people, etc. I did meet him back in the 90s. I did have the opportunity of meeting him. He wasn't quite as famous as he is now. I went to a seminar where he was a guest of honor. So that he won't remember me.
Oh, really? But David, he's the London building is exactly the same. They excavated it in a very historic area of the City of London, you know, the original centre of London, and they found Roman ruins and everything. They've turned it into museums. There's an underground river that was exposed that's now been covered in perspex, and it looks just amazing. You go in there, and it's incredible. It really is. I mean, we talked about the Discovery Building earlier on, but this thing is out of this world.
You have to understand, you know, I think few people understand this is a reasonably new business. You know, Reuters, I don't know when did Mr. Reuters start Reuters? I think maybe the first
20 years ago or
1900s
something.
Or thereabouts.
Maybe, maybe
had
before.
A big start on Michael Bloomberg, And so Bloomberg's built a formidable organization.
Yeah,
so
really
good
has.
Luck to him.
Yeah, good luck to him as well. Yeah, let's give Trump a run for his money. He won't quite manage it, but anyway, he'll enjoy spending $1 billion on giving it a go. Anyway, anything else you're seeing at the moment, David, before we turn to football?
Look, the markets are strong. Lindsay, I'm a bull.
Yes.
I'm an ultra bull. But I must admit that it's taken me by surprise how strong the market is. And I think that before we start to call it, you know, coming back, we were worried about the virus. We were worried about a whole lot of other issues and that. And I think coming back now and taking a step back, I think the only time this market's going to tumble is when we start to see interest rates rise. You know, when you start to get a threat of inflation coming through and rates rising, I think it's going to unsettle the market. Until then, just let it run. You know what I'm saying? Don't be too quick to shut it down.
No.
That, to me, is going to be the only issue. So it's surprising me. I'm enjoying it. But watch, you know, we've got to watch data for any signs. And for the meantime, if anything, if you looked at retail numbers coming out of the U.S. and other data, it's more likely that central banks are going to keep lowering rates rather than raising rates, which just makes it equities, for whatever reason, a little more attractive than they are. But valuations, you've got to admit, are starting to look a bit stretched.
They are, but not too stretched. They can become more stretched. And it could be another couple of years. Who knows? It's the longest expansionary period in recent stock market history. Football now, and we have to bring some money into this because Manchester City have been... Now, this is important. I mean, well done to Arsenal, by the way, for beating Newcastle 4-0. But, I mean, you know, is that an achievement? I'm not so sure. But anyway, they won 4-0.
Well, all the Arsenal fans think we've won the league, you know that.
Yeah, you've moved up to 10th in the table. Couldn't believe it. But the other thing is that Manchester City, with their Middle Eastern backing, has been banned from the UEFA Champions League for 2 years. There are several implications for this. First of all, the loss of revenue, which is, I don't know, if you win the UEFA Champions League, it's worth £90 to £100 million, apparently. So that's obviously quite significant. And even if you get to the quarterfinals or semifinals, you're still getting handsomely rewarded. But also, it just means that Pep, who's, you know, he's a football manager, he's got an ego, he's not going to be with a team for 2 years that are not competing in Europe. He's not going to want to just be in charge of a team that's playing Burnley and Newcastle and Huddersfield every week. He'll be gone. The players will leave as well because they want the glamour of going to Milan and Barcelona and Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain and all those places. It's very, very significant what's happened.
It is, and it's distressing that they should fudge the numbers like they did.
Yeah,
and you know, hide what is an investment as being apparel sales or sponsorship, whatever it is. Yeah. So, you know, and listen, Chelsea suffered. Chelsea were also banned from buying new players, what, for 2 years. And so, you know, this seems to be all part of fair play. And why do you have to do that? You know, why do they have to do it from that point of view? And now, sure, I don't know how the owners are going to feel or whether they were part of it. I'm not sure they were part of it. But whatever it is, it is going to bring the, you know, it's going to bring the team down. And the next 2 years is going to be very difficult. And it's sad. It's rather sad. You know, do you really want Sheffield United in the Champions League? I mean, or Spurs? But in all fairness, the Champions League only becomes interesting now. You know, the first part is just such a lot of bunk, because there are teams there that quite honestly are no better than Sheffield United. So we'll see. Listen, and even Liverpool started to look a little tired, you know, yesterday. They seemed to be battling, and this was Norwich. So you're beginning to wonder about the league.
Yeah, but what you also worry about is when you look at the major European leagues, that's Italy, Spain, and the English Premier League. You look at those three. The other ones are actually quite exciting. You've got a two-horse race between Barcelona and Real Madrid. You've got Napoli, Inter Milan, and Juventus in the Italian League, which is the most exciting at the moment. You go to England, 25 points clear, Liverpool. They are standout, the best team in the world at the moment.
No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. And they've got a beautiful balance. And where the strength comes is in their back line. That to me just identifies, you know, you can have the greatest striking force, but if you've got no defenders, it leaves you vulnerable. But I think Virgil van Dijk and the two backs just make up the whole team at that, and they never let you down, you know, game after game, just there and steady. And I think to a large extent, that's where that's where the league has been won, and that's where this record has been set. It's for me, it's in their defense.
Well said. David Shapiro is the deputy chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.